Hey, Bob, do you think anyone can tell?
Tell? What do you mean?
The Elvish accent. You know, how English isn't our first language.
No way.
The following podcast contains graphic descriptions of international celebrating and global merrymaking. It may not be suitable for angry or unhappy audience members. Listener discretion is advised. You've been warned.
Have you ever seen any of those foreign films? I don't like them.
Lord, you! Christmas last for you.
Some are born great, others achieve greatness, and some watch Christmas movies.
For Natale!
Both festive, aren't they?
Joyeux Noël!
And we are the Festive Foreign Film Fans. Howdy, Mark.
Hello, Bob. How's your day going today?
Mark, it's going great, but it suddenly hit me. We're like at the end of summer. Can you believe it? I mean, things have, oh my gosh. Flown by. Well, what a summer, though. Like, you've recovered from your injury. You got a new baby granddaughter who's awesome. You went on vacation and Bob didn't. So
Bob, you need to go on vacation.
Mark, this is my vacation. I travel around the world every time we meet. But you know what makes me so, we're heading into the burr months. And and that always makes me start to think about Christmas. And I was curious what you thought about, does this whole Christmas creep thing bother you? Like, if you go into store and see them, putting Christmas stuff out in September, October, does that bother you?
So many things bother me.
You like the grumpy old man on the porch. Kids can stay off my lawn.
Maybe. No, I think merchandising, the commercialization of Christmas coming too early. I would say I'm going to be duplicitous here, right? On the one hand, celebrating Christmas and the spirit of Christmas is always a good thing, right? Because I just think it's a happy time. It's a relaxing time. And so, again, I think I mentioned in an episode, if I see a Christmas movie in July or June or as we're doing this, I still get that Christmas feeling, which is great. But when I walk into a superstore and it's we haven't even got to Columbus Day yet and they have their, garland up, it can irritate me a little bit. How about you? How do you react to that?
Well, it's funny because, I tend to be as my family would think, like the Christmas nut and all that. But I do set up boundaries. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't put up decorations, Christmas decorations, before Thanksgiving. Typically, that's when we'll start putting decorations out after Thanksgiving. Now, there are people, now that it's becoming like this whole debate, like, we want to move it, right the day after Halloween, we put our Christmas tree up, or halfway through into November, we're starting to decorate. And I think, to keep things special, you got to limit,
Right.
And again, I know this is the guy talking about, I would talk about a Christmas movie every month for, of the year. I don't know. There's certain things I have rules around, and that's one of them.
Now, what about turning them off and taking them down? What's your boundary there? So nothing before Thanksgiving, but what about how long after?
Well, so, and this is a relatively new kind of rule I set up. So it used to be kind of when it was convenient, and I didn't like that. I didn't like, my wife has a friend that, I am not kidding, she starts to pack this stuff up Christmas Day. I swear, it's taking everything down. Like, it seems like she's so eager to put it all away and get it done with. I don't like that at all. What I have started to kind of follow is January 6th, like mm-hmm. that, that 12 days of Christmas,
right.
the time period after Advent's before,
correct.
Right? And so the 12 is after until,
right.
The Epiphany. So that's what I will use now. Usually January 6th is when we'll take stuff down.
That's what we do as well. Yeah.
But you know, having said that, like sometimes if I walk into a store like, you know, around here would be like a craft store, like a Michael's or a Hobby Lobby. I mean, I think they have Christmas stuff year round.
They do.
And, you know, I'll be looking for something and I just happen to stumble on that aisle and I'm like, it makes me smile. It doesn't bother me at all. It could be the middle of summer and I'm walking down the aisle going, oh, this stuff looks great. Great. Yeah, I can't wait.
So, ready to talk about a movie tonight?
I am.
Want to watch a Christmas movie?
Christmas movies are our bread and butter.
We eat Chinese food and watch Christmas movies.
I heard it's the best Christmas movie since Home Alone.
One thing I like about this movie is the fact that it's a regional Canadian movie. So it's the French part of Canada. So Mark, we can still do a Canadian movie as well.
Well, you know, Canada is so diverse and big, right? So I'm sure we'll find others to do. But you're right. This is more about the Quebec region.
Yeah.
The name of the movie is, and this movie was released in 1972. So going back a few years. But, and I also noticed that, Bob, that this is mostly spoken in French. And as I think you are a very literate in the French language, so you're going to help me with any mispronunciations today. But this movie is called Mon Oncle Antoine, My Uncle Antoine.
Yeah.
And this movie, you know, it's interesting. We recently did a movie that had so many casts and so many people intertwined. This has very few people in the movie, so it's a little bit easier to follow. But the first person we'll talk about is an actor by the name of Jacques Yonon. He plays Benoit. Benoit is a young kid. He's probably, I'd say, like sixth or seventh grade, but he's known for only two films from the 1970s, this one and another French-Canadian film called The Death of a Lumberjack.
Which sounds kind of cool, but...
It does. Actually, every time I hear Lumberjack, I just go to Monty Python. He also serviced 30 years later as a production assistant in a 2001 David Mamet film called Heist with Gene Hackman and Danny DeVito. So I thought that's pretty interesting.
Yeah,
so maybe he was acting and then he left, but he came back in to be involved in the movie industry. Also in the movie is Juan Dosep. He plays Uncle Antoine. He's not been seen in U.S. movies, but appeared in more than 160 Canadian plays, radio shows, TV series, and films. He was also named as the Knight of the National Order of Quebec.
Wow.
So probably very prominent in his region. Also, I would say, too, very distinguished actor in his presence in the film.
Yes. Yep.
And then the last actor or actress is Olivette Thibault. She plays Tante Cecilia or Aunt Cecilia. She's a Canadian stage, film, and television actress from Quebec, but nothing in the U.S. that we could find. She did win the Canadian Film Award for Best Supporting Actress for this role of Mon Oncle Antoine. Mm. And so, you know, it's interesting. Before I get into the review of the movie, it did receive quite a bit of acclaim.
Yes, yes.
It was many people, you know, who are art critics said it was one of the best, if not the best film ever to come out of the Quebec region, that it made a statement in the 70s that that there was a film industry in Canada that should be reckoned with. And so I thought that was interesting to hear as we talk about this movie, that from the Canadian national and across the world in the U.S., this received a lot of high acclaim, and it doesn't surprise me that it had a nomination.
One of the reasons why we selected this movie is, Mark, this has kind of a personal connection to you, doesn't it?
I will share with those. I think there was actually multiple than for me to maybe relate to.
Oh.
But I think what Bob was really is focusing as my dad was a funeral director.
Yes.
Yeah. And so growing up in that, I think I saw a little bit of myself in Benoit. He's a lot cuter and a better actor than I ever would ever be. But yeah, let's talk about it. So, You know, what's interesting is that this movie is made in the 70s. It's really depicting a time in the 40s and 50s. It's you know, it's a coming of age movie. It's a it's one person who is still coming to age, and that's Benoit. But then there's Uncle Antoine, who's really at the end of his life. Yep. And I think he's really bitter about all the choices he made. But it's also set in a town, a small town, where they're mining asbestos.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I was thinking like, yeah, I guess at some point in time before we knew and understood the health hazards of asbestos, it had to be mined. You know, and so there's...
But isn't that amazing? Now we have that perspective and you're like, oh my gosh, these guys are like mining asbestos, you know? Right.
And it's also the... I think also there's a little bit of a power struggle between the townsfolks, right, who are speaking French, and then the mine owners who are American.
Yeah, yes.
Right, and so there's a scene where, you know, there's... a conflict between two people, and the mine owner speaking English, the local is speaking in French and refuses to speak in English, and so it sort of sets the tone. But it's that's where it sort of gives you the backdrop.
As an American, though, weren't you cheering on the Quebec?
Yeah,
the guy from Quebec.
Absolutely. Oh, totally. Yeah. Like I'm like, you rude.
Yeah.
You know, like why are you doing that? You know, it's so. But anyway, but the story, right? So Benoit is a young teenage boy living in this rural part of Quebec. He works at the general store in town with Aunt Cecilia and Uncle Antoine. Uncle Antoine is really not only the owner of the general store, but he's also the town funeral director. And it's similar to some of other movies. This all places takes place on Christmas Eve.
Yep.
You know, he begins his work day, Benoit does, by setting up the Christmas display in the window of the general store. You know, you see the townspeople coming to see this big
unveiling.
Wasn't
that great? Like, what a throwback. They were so excited for, and they knew that when it was going to happen, they all lined up and they put in, even the shopkeepers, how involved they were to, let's get it all perfect because we're going to open the display.
And, you know, it's interesting. This is one of those moments where it did resonate with me because it goes into what we were just talking about a little bit ago on Thanksgiving Eve, right? So after we've had our meal at our house back in Pennsylvania, the big event was families would drive. We would walk because we're only a couple miles away from downtown, but we would go down to the Boston store, and the Boston store was sort of our local department store. And it was just such a thrill to see the Boston store unveil their Christmas window, right? Like Marshall Field, I think used to do it in Chicago.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was it was a family tradition. And of course, as a kid, you would go to the window that had all the toys,
yes,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you even see it in movies with the Red Ryder, right? Mm-hmm. The BB gun, right? So that was like when they did the unveiling, I thought to myself, yeah, you know, I remember that feeling of anticipation of, you know, Christmas is here. So that's how the movie starts, with him setting up that display. You know, again, he's come of age in that 12 years old range. He's got a little crush on Carmen. Carmen is actually someone who is sort of adopted by Aunt Cecile and Uncle Antoine, although she's not orphaned, because in the movie there's this very uncomfortable moment when her dad shows up. Yeah. Right, who maybe appears to be maybe alcoholic, and
a bit lecherous,
and he wants the wages that his daughter has earned.
Yes,
and this is where, like, through the movie, you think like, well, maybe this Uncle Antoine's a pretty good dude, right? Because he gives the wages to the dad, but he holds back $5.
Yes, yeah,
and I'm thinking like, well, that's a very sweet thing to do. He's also very complimentary of his wife, As the movie goes on, he becomes maybe less of a good guy. So parallel to them getting ready for Christmas, we have a character, Madame Poulain. Her son, Marcel, dies that day, and sad. He's probably 15 years old, and she places a call to the store asking if Antoine can come out and take care of the body, right? She's out in the middle of nowhere. Of course, it's a snowy Christmas Eve. her husband, he's the one who had the conflict with the English mine owner, and he took off to go to the forest to chop trees down, Christmas trees, for the mining of trees and harvesting of the trees. But, you know, he gets this call. It's a very sad moment. And Benoit, who's, you know, 12 years old and stuff, he asks to go with Antoine to pick up the body, right? Yeah. And it's kind of a big moment, right? He's coming of age, right? He's you know, interested in this girl. And I think he might even be trying to show off maybe for her a little bit. But he asks, and his aunt and uncle allow him to go with them out into the woods. And at the time, again, it's 1940s, it's very rural. It's a horse-drawn carriage,
yeah,
right, that they go out and they
with a casket on it.
Yeah. They do. So they go out and they meet, and maybe I'll interject sort of to some of the things too. At this point, you know, you're thinking a little bit like, isn't this nice? The uncle and the nephew are going to have this fond moment.
Yeah, bonding.
Bonding, right, teach him things. But, you know, it's one of the parts where when you start to see Uncle Antoine as maybe a villainous person, is when they get to the house where the young man has died. The mom, who's mourning the loss of her son, says, "Oh, I've made you a meal." And so he sits down and has this meal and starts drinking their liquor, instead of sort of being sympathetic, supportive, and getting in and out of there as fast as they could. He sits down and starts eating and drinking. And
it was so uncomfortable.
Yeah, I was very uncomfortable. Yeah. And again, being the son of a funeral director who, it really was around the same age as Benoit, that I started to go with my dad.
Oh, wow.
You know, so I was probably, you know, in sixth or seventh grade. My brothers and would had been helping my dad. I was getting old enough now, so if someone would pass, we would go to the hospital, to the funeral, or to a nursing home, or to someone's home to remove the body, right? But I remember how just, like, we would do it in such a respectful way, get there as, you know, as quick as we could, especially if it was in someone's home. And I see this guy eating and drinking, and I was getting angry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was very angry. But
as Benoit doesn't understand it either.
Oh, he's very confused.
Yeah.
You know,
to your point, I think he thought of this as a bit of an adventure he was going to go on, and he keeps, it's disappointment after disappointment.
You know? Yeah. He wants to go in and do what he has to do quickly, keep staring at the door where he knows where the young man has died. So they go out and they, pick up the body, you know, they put it in the casket, they're riding home. By this time, Uncle Antoine is inebriated, falling asleep at the reins, falling almost off the wagon. And so I think Antoine is, again, stepping up, wanting to take control. So he grabs the reins from his uncle and tries to speed up the process by getting the horse to go. But unfortunately, the casket falls off of the back of the sled. Benoit turns around. He tries to help get the casket on by himself, tries to get Uncle Antoine to sober up to help him, but he can do neither.
Right, yep.
And so he continues the ride back into the hometown in Quebec and goes and runs in to find the aunt and knock on the door to try to get some help, only to find out that the aunt was having an affair with one of the shopkeeper helpers, yeah, right? And I'm like, well, this is turning a different way. And so, and again, Antoine, again, he's shocked, right? So probably in a span of a few hours, right, he sort of has flirted with his girlfriend to be. He has gone out with his uncle Antoine and has been exposed to sort of death, and now he finds his aunt is having an affair, and he's confused, right?
It's life crashing in on him.
It is life crashing. I mean, he doesn't know really what to do. And so through that, the some chaotic moments there, he finally gets the helper to come down to help him. And the helper name is, what was his name? I'm forgetting it, but, he helps him, Ferdinand helps him, go back into the cart, go looking for where the casket is drawn. Again, Benoit is so confused. He doesn't know where they are and how to find it. But eventually they find their way back to the house. Parallel to them looking, the father had come back from chopping trees down from the lumberjacking that he was doing. And they get back to the house where Marcel had died. And Benoit peeks into the window only to see that the father had found the casket.
Yeah.
And the whole family is sort of all around the casket mourning. And the movie concludes with the dad sort of looking at Benoit like they're making eye contact. Both of them in this, the dad is grieving. I think Benoit is confused about all the things that have happened. And then the movie ends.
Yeah.
And so.
And it's like Christmas Day, them around their dead brother, sibling, son.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it was, you know, there was. So when I think about the movie, at the end of it, really, I just stopped and said, what the f-? Like, I really, I'm like, what has happened in this movie? Like I said, there's multiple themes. We can get into our ratings.
Okay. I don't know if you recall, but when I watched it and I said to you, Mark, you're going to have to explain this to me because I knew it was got a lot of rave reviews and all that. And I was the same way. It ends and I'm like, what was that? You know, I mean, so we could go through. I mean, first off, is this festive?
No,
it's not at all.
I mean, I think the element of Christmas is interesting, right? It allows for some lighthearted moments, but I didn't consider it a Christmas movie. You know, I mean, to me, again, I think it's a coming of age movie.
Yes.
I think it's you know, Antoine is bitter. Like he, you know, he even says through his drunken, you know, stammering that, you know, he should have never married his wife. He should have. His dream was to own a hotel in America.
Yes. Yep.
Right. And so I think he's just an awful character, which again, throughout the movie, there's times when you're cheering for him and it's like, oh, he's a good guy. But other times you realize that he's not a good person.
Yeah. I mean, the unfortunate thing is Benoit is kind of, we see this all through his eyes. Everybody seems miserable.
Right.
The town is like a one industry town. So the owners of the plant or where they mine the asbestos pretty much own the town. And there's like a scene where he's driving through town and throwing out like this just little, you know, trinkets to the kids and acting like he's Mr. So gregarious and generous. Yeah. And that is so, it's terrible. The father of the son who dies seems to have, it doesn't seem like he doesn't like to work. He has problems at the mine, and I think it's because of the management.
Yep.
And then he goes to work hard at the lumber mill, but you're away from your family and it's the holidays, and so he leaves that too. And in both instances, they kind of say, you're not going to be hired back. So he pretty much has lost his job, you know.
Right.
Antoine, who's, like you said, has two industries, he turns out to be such a disappointment. The aunt is the guy, the other shop helper. Now, the young girl, but she has a lecherous dad. You don't know, you feel bad for her. It's just everybody is miserable.
They are. And that's, you're right. It is all through Antoine's eyes. And Carmen, you know, the little girl and young woman, she's obviously finding a connection with Antoine. They like each other. They're sort of the good versus all the other evil around there. You know, I'd love when Benoit is working at the church, going in. And this is also something that resonated with me as an altar boy. You know, if you got there early before the priest got there, you could drink some of the wine, eat some of the communion if you're hungry. And so, you know, that was sort of a little sweet moment.
That was funny.
Where, you know, He's devious, but he's not bad.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't think this is a festive movie.
And then what does it make you feel? Really what it made me feel was exactly how I described it. Like, what was that? And why is it so highly rated? That's why I was curious, because I know in a lot of ways, I know you watch films and you seem to draw more out of them than I do. I miss some of the deeper meaning. And I thought, is there some message here that I'm missing? Because I felt kind of empty. Like, what was that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, I don't know if this is 100% accurate, but I think it might have been trying to portray the times in the 40s and 50s, mm-hmm. in Northern Quebec, right? When there was, you know, I think how we view and see Canada today is not the same as it was. Like, they went through their different, I wouldn't say revolutions, but I can't think of a better word. But they had times when there was tumultuous relationships between Americans and Canadians, yes, yep. even their governing bodies. And I think, again, maybe it's this is how bleak it was, this is how bad it was. And so maybe it was highly acclaimed because they felt like that's what it looked like to be in that region, right?
Well, it was very realistic portrayal.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you felt like you were watching life unfold in front of you right on the film. So it's just, you know, would I watch it again in the future? I don't think. And this is one of the few, I couldn't see a reason why I would, unless somebody wanted to see it and I was sitting next to them. But I just, you know,
yeah.
I think we talked about in one of our previous episodes, I like my Christmas films a little uplifting. You know, I can take the horror and some of the other ones even better than this was just, oh, nothing seemed redeeming about it.
No, I'm with you, Bob. Again, I felt I was sort of sad and felt bad for Benoit,
yeah.
and what he was facing with, and really thought about, well, what's his future,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, where does he go from here now that he knows his aunt is cheating with Ferdinand? His uncle is an alcoholic who is really not a very good person.
And so unhappy,
right? Benoit is an orphan. Right. And so what's his future? You know, has Carmen, but it's, yeah, I would not recommend it. I probably won't watch it again. And if someone said, hey, did you ever hear this about this movie? I would just say, look, if you're going to watch it, let me disclose a few things. But the acting was good, right?
Okay.
I mean, I could see why from an acting perspective, you know, Uncle Antoine, again, you dislike him so much because I think it was well acted.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was curious to hear what you were going to say about recommending. I'm glad that you said that because, again, if someone asked me about it, I would tell them I could come up with probably 200 plus movies before I would say, and there's this other one up from Quebec that you ought to see. But.
Yeah, other than to say, for many people, right, or in the reviews I read, this was the rubber the acknowledgement that there was a film industry in northeast Canada coming out of Quebec that should be reckoned with, that should be followed. So they had that going for them.
That they did.
But, you know, it's interesting, Bob. So in that region, though, you know, you would think, you know, most of the movie was spoken in French, but the language up in that area, there's a lot of native Canadians, mm-hmm. who live in that region. And so instead of doing the French version of Merry Christmas, which you know to be
Joyeux Noël.
Right, exactly. I thought it'd be interesting to talk about, you know, it's pronounced Mi'kmaq. Dialect, which isn't like a native, like what we'd call the indigenous.
Oh yeah, the indigenous tribe there. Yeah.
Yep. And so
they say Merry Christmas.
They do. And this is my version of it. But I think how they would say it was Eloé Ulenoleon.
Wow.
So Eloé Ulenoleon.
Eloé Ulenoleon.
Yep.
Wow.
So I thought it was very interesting for where this was filmed that they, and again, researching it, some interesting facts we talked about, is that there's a whole movement now to reintroduce some of the indigenous languages into Canada because, you know, the French language has taken over, just like we see in America, right? English language over all the different Native American languages. And so I found that kind of interesting coming out of this movie that maybe we need to be more sensitive to.
You know what? It makes me think, too, a Native American Christmas film. Maybe we could find one of those.
Let's look. Let's put it on our list.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some of the traditions. So French Canadians spend Christmas Eve singing and dancing and, above all, eating. The celebration is known as Réveillon, and it's the biggest feast of the year. It has a large banquet with traditional dishes like pig's feet, stew, turkey, pea soup, maple syrup. And then there's
of course, maple syrup.
It makes me think of Elf. Réveillon comes from the French word meaning reveal, which means to wake. The feast is on Christmas Eve because all good French Catholics were required to stay up late and must attend Mass. And after the service, they would come home and sort of eat and drink through the whole night and into the morning.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to suggest
it just, does sound like a réveillon. Réveillon.
Réveillon. That sounds like a celebration. Yeah. Also, there's also, I thought this was very interesting, that there's a similar themed tradition. There's a famous story about a group of men who are in a logging camp who are homesick and want to spend the Réveillon with their wives and their girlfriends. So they make a deal with the devil, deal with the devil at Christmas, to fly their canoe over the forest and hills so they can go back to their homes at night. But the devil gives them three conditions. One, they cannot swear. They could not touch a church steeple with their canoe while in flight, and they had to be back before 6 o'clock in the morning. Unfortunately, the men get a little bit overserved, and they don't return to camp, and they do swear, and they are then cast forever to fly their canoe forever across the sky with their souls never getting to their eternal rest. And they say, Bob, we'll have to test this. They say that if you look out on Christmas Eve, you can sometimes get a glimpse of the bewitched canoe.
Mark, you know, I just love that because we had the character in the movie, the dad who rushed home, and it was far away, and they had said, you're not going to make it in time and all of that, and he didn't get there till the morning. But yeah, so luckily he didn't make a deal with the devil, I guess.
Exactly. So I'm going to be watching out for low-flying canoes if I go to Quebec.
Grandma. Crossing.
Yeah. You know, if you're from Quebec, you believe Santa is accompanied by, oh my goodness, La Fée Étoile.
Ooh, very good.
Or the Star Fairy. The Star Fairy evolved from Saint Lucie. The Feast of Saint Lucie is on December 13th, and marks the winter solstice. So the shortest day and the longest night of the year. So the name Lucy comes from Latin lux, meaning light. So you're kind of celebrating sort of the longest day, right? And the next day after that starts to be the long, you know, the light gets a little bit longer, or you get more light longer at the following day. Santa's accompanied by a young woman clad in white and blue costume, wielding a star tipped wand that helps Santa. So she's kind of doing the magic wand act.
You know what's amazing about this? I have never heard that before, ever. And could you imagine, I was just thinking, seeing a picture, there's Santa, and there's this, like, what looks like the Tooth Fairy standing next to him.
Exactly. But yeah, for some very interesting traditions. What about music?
This calls for some Christmas music.
Yes, this Christmas music.
What kind of Christmas music is that?
The least you could do is play some Christmas music.
And now back to Christmas music.
Should we take a minute and listen to some songs?
Yes.
Okay.
Do they have Quebec songs?
They do.
Le papa, le papi, le papa, le papi, le papa Noël, c'est un Québécois. Avec ses madeleines, pis son gros parka. Le Père Noël, c'est un Québécois. Son sac de bébelles, rempli de joie. un train pour Alain, un foulard pour Édouard, une poupée pour Mireille, des patins pour le petit Corbeil. Oh ouais!
So Bob, how do we not share the song La Prière Niron Souton Quebecois, or Santa Claus is a Quebecaner?
Perfect.
I mean, the song is from 1970, but there's been some popular remakes by a parody group called the Bom Ding Band from 1997. And in the video, they do a retro reconstruction of a 1970s holiday party, which is it's really kind of a fun festive thing. But
I get to see this video. I do.
it's hilarious, and it's sort of a commentary on overconsumption. But I mean, the one sentence in there, and the thing is, with his wooden stockings and his big parka, Santa Claus is a Quebecaner, and his bag is filled with joy.
I love it. Perfect. That was a great choice.
And what's interesting, you know, I know we're getting near the end, but I have to tell you a quick story about Sue and I. We were in Montreal, and we went there, and we went to a bar. I know, shocking. and there was live music, and, you know, there's a little bit of English, a little bit of French, and all of a sudden, and when we walked in, we had to take, you know, we asked for two. We got seated at a table with another couple who we had no idea. We said just a quick set of lows, some. They knew they were speaking English, but all of a sudden the guy who's the performer starts singing and people start clapping and people started standing up. And so soon it's being said in French, we didn't know what to do. And the woman gently reaches over to Sue and she's like, you should stand up. And so we stood up and we start clapping. And so we're done. And I said, why did we stand up? He's like, well, he was singing about, let's identify all the dumb tourists who are here today with us, and let's see who is the fool who's the last one to stand up. And whoever the last fool to stand up will buy everybody a drink, right?
Oh,
so it's kind
wow.
of a fun song. But they were just a sweet couple. But that's where I learned the phrase Quebecois.
Oh,
which means people of Quebec. Because they said, where are you from? At the time, we said Delaware. And she's like, oh, we're Quebecois. And I didn't know what that meant. So when I was researching, I saw the Quebecois there. I had to use it.
That's great. That's awesome. And it helps to understand that this really is its own defined region, right?
It is.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's fun to, again, I know we've been sometimes butchering certain names and dialects.
All the times.
All the times. But I guess I have a question for you. If there was one foreign language that you could speak and understand, which would it be?
Well, so I studied in college Chinese. I took intensive Chinese. And in fact, I have a Chinese minor. And then I didn't use, my plan was I wanted to be a foreign correspondent. And then I went to school and studied journalism. But then I decided to go to law school. And then when I was in law school, I was going to go, I wanted to get, they had a law school program in China. Can you imagine China in like the late 80s, what that would have been like? Right when I was going, my dad had a heart attack. So I didn't go. And then if you don't use Chinese, you lose it. So then at the local community college, they had China. And I went back and I was surprised at how well I could still pick it up and read it, but the speaking is so difficult, I couldn't. So I've had this on and off love affair with trying to learn the language because it's difficult and interesting. And
that's interesting. Yeah. Thanks for sharing. I some new facts I know about Bob Baker that I didn't know in the past. Well, for me, it would be Italian. Like, wow. I just think Italian is just a beautiful, passionate language. When people speak it, they just are just so passionate about when they're speaking. Obviously, it's a love language, and it's been around for forever, right? And so, you know, visiting Italy and seeing things that are thousands of years old, you know, it'd be interesting to go back but go back where I understood everything that, and so I could talk to the locals and just get a better understanding of their culture.
I have to invite you to one of Mary Ellen's, I spoke about her Christmas Eve, that's now the Saturday before Christmas, with her 100% Italian cousins. And you get them all together and they're talking and their hands are flying and they're fighting and they're laughing and it's a hoot.
That's, I, I considered that the invitation. So I'm there. But maybe we'll close with a quote. So the one I've chosen tonight is by our former president, Ronald Reagan. And what the old Gipper said was, Christmas is a holiday that we celebrate not as individuals, nor as a nation, but as a human family.
Wow. Well, I can't believe old Ronnie had that in him, huh?
Nor did I.
And say no to drugs.
And say that was, I think it was Nancy. Okay. So thanks for everyone for listening. If you have comments or suggestions on your favorite festive foreign films, contact us. If you have any feedback for us, just let us know. And contact us at festivefans@AOL.com. And also leave a review. We appreciate you.
Leave a review. And we're going to have our Facebook page. We're working on it. That's going to come up. We'll be announcing that soon as well.
Actually, we're done.
Done.
It's over. Over, over. It's over.
It's over. Kaput. Finito.
It's over. It's over.
Over.
This has been a Waysound Studio production.
And sound engineering on our show is by Jake Fontana.